We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The CV Report.
TPS report.
The CV report.
Give us one word to describe what you're going through right now.
Sucky.
Sucky.
Yeah. I know it's just a Nissan Frontier, but in my mind, this thing's an M1 Abrams tank.
Honey, take the wheel. I'm going to stick my head out of the sunroof.
Look, any self-respecting veteran should grow a beard and have a belly.
That's the dumbest thing I've heard all day.
Like, if we're going to start getting angry now, it's a little late.
Is live in D.C. with the update on all of this. Good morning. Maybe. I guess not.
The CV Report.
Welcome to another CV Report. I'm your host, Navy veteran Phil Briggs. And as always, we are powered by Entercom's ConnectingVets.com. The multimedia lifestyle website dedicated to the military veteran. We got a great podcast for you today. A little bit later, we're going to hear from actor, director, and star of the new movie Sergeant Will Gardner, Max Martini. We've seen Max in dozens of things, including Saving Private Ryan and CBS's hit TV show The Unit. Max will tell us why this isn't just another military-themed movie about a damaged veteran. And it's got an inspirational plotline. But it's also got an inspirational cast, including a lesser-known actor named Luis Bordenada, who's not only an actor, but is an Army veteran, and has an incredible backstory that we'll get into at the end of the cast. But before we get into that, we're going to hear about the real-life cost of this government shutdown, this border wall crisis, and this crisis of common sense on Capitol Hill. We're going to hear how it's actually affecting veterans from the veterans themselves. Joining me in studio is Connecting Vets reporter Libby Howe. How are you?
I'm good. It's Friday. We made it.
We did. Through a week and, I don't know, what do we call this week? It was a literal show with news of the government shutdown and really the showdown over a border wall. Talk to me about the veterans you recently spoke with being affected by this whole mess.
Yep. Politicians are talking about it. Other veterans are talking about it. More and more, we're realizing that a lot of the federal employees who are affected by the shutdown are veterans. And so we were kind of trying to put faces and names to this overarching concept of a shutdown, because to a lot of people not directly affected by it, what does the shutdown mean? What does it really do? And so we wanted to talk to the actual veterans who are being affected by the shutdown.
Now, you met two or three of them from around the country and talked to them on the phone. Talk to me about who we're getting ready to hear.
So there were three, and they are from across the country, and they're doing different jobs within the federal government. So Ed Canales is a combat veteran, a disabled veteran, and currently works as a federal correctional officer. William Reese was an Army veteran. He's a Desert Storm veteran, and now he works as a transportation security officer. And then Toby Hauk is an Air Force veteran, and he works in Chicago as an air traffic controller. And all three of them are dealing with very unique problems that are coming from the shutdown. It's not just across the board, how are we going to pay for our bills? Each of them has other unique problems that are all stemming from the government shutdown.
Let's start with, this is Toby. He's, what did you say he was?
Air traffic controller.
Okay.
Our folks are coming to work and being very professional and separating aircraft every day. It's a fragile system. The National Airspace is a system that relies on all parts working together without problems. And this is definitely is a pretty serious blow to the whole system. It's just unacceptable for our leadership to be playing, using our profession, our career, and our livelihoods as a political football.
Mm, so well said. Talk to me about who we're going to hear next.
Well, William Reese is a transportation security officer out of Pittsburgh, and he's going to have to resort to some pretty drastic measures in order to overcome some of the effects of the shutdown.
The outlook for my family itself is, it's me and my two sons, mm-hmm. and they're going to try to help me as they can, being it's right after the holidays and everybody's still recouping and got their bills to pay and got the Christmas debt. Mm-hmm. So we all had to sit down and have a family talk, and they're going to do their part, and we're going to see how long this lasts, and hopefully we can make it through it.
Wow. I mean, you know, these are the things you hear about when somebody loses a job. And the irony is they didn't lose their job. They still have jobs. They're just not getting the money. And as a parent, I can tell you, it's supposed to work the other way around. You know, you're supposed to be looking to your kids and saying, how can I help you? You know, not looking at your sons saying, you know, can you keep dad in his house? Heartbreaking. Also heartbreaking, this last one, Mr. Canales.
Yes, Ed Canales is a federal correctional officer. He and his wife are both federal employees, so neither of them are receiving income. He also, early on in the shutdown, gave personal loans out to a lot of veterans who were coming to him for help, thinking that the shutdown would not last as long as it has. And now he's more strapped for cash because of the loans that he gave out to other veterans.
Oh, my.
On top of all of this, he's also a disabled veteran. And I think a lot of people don't know that because the VA is operational, right? It wasn't affected by the shutdown.
Right.
But there are only two statuses that federal employees can be. They can be furloughed or they can be on work status. Mr. Canales is on work status. But if you're on work status, you can't use any of your annual leave. You can't take sick days. You need to be on work status. And appointments that Mr. Canales had at the VA, because he is a disabled veteran, he's not able to attend because of those stipulations.
Wow. Here's a great quote from your conversation with him.
Please stop holding our checks hostage. And they have to remember, they have to throw away the politics and remember, these are American families. Mm-hmm. These are families that you want to live the American dream and work and be able to provide for their family. And with one swipe, they took it all away from us, and there's no end in sight. And I want to let them know that if something happens, the blood is on their hands.
What a powerful statement. And I was really glad that you were able to reach out to all three of those veterans and do an article on them. I can't wait to hear more about your conversations with them.
Yep, and you can read all of their stories. The article is They Have to Remember, There Are American Families, Meet the Veterans Struggling with the Shutdown.
All right. Well, Libby, I know you're going to stay on the case. You can find that article at connectingvets.com. Thank you for your solid reporting, and I look forward to hearing more about maybe some help coming around the corner for all of our veterans and all of our friends that are experiencing the pain. Now, like we just heard, many veterans are being affected in very personal ways by this government border wall shutdown showdown, whatever the hell you want to call it. But earlier today, I had a phone call with a veteran named Clifton Burroughs, and he has a message for everyone.
I'm from Houston, Texas. I served in the United States Army from 1988 to 1992, and I served in Bomb Holder, Germany, in field artillery, and I ETS'd out of Fort Riley, Kansas, in the Big Red One. Phil, I am an employee at the Federal Bureau of Prisons. I have been working for the federal government for 29 years, 4 years in the United States Army, 5 years in state government, and the past 20 years for the Federal Bureau of Prisons. My duty station is the Federal Detention Center in downtown Houston. I am currently furloughed and have been since December 21st. That means I'm not getting paid. And just got off the phone with a bill collector before I called you to see if I could get an extension. And the answer was, we're not going to continue any service until you pay your bill. The bills come, and I haven't found anyone, whether it be the car, Ford Motor Company, or Quicken Loans, haven't found anyone that has any sympathy for a federal employee yet. It's like, just because we're not getting paid, we should still pay them. And normally, you have savings that you can rely on, but my wife is not working anymore, so I'm the sole provider. She had to leave work through illness. And so we've already used that emergency rainy day fund. And the choice I'm having to make is, do I continue to pay credit cards, house note, car note, or do I put gas in my car to put food on the table for my 11-year-old daughter that I just saw off to school this morning.
Man.
The problem is I've been faithful to my country for 29 years. Whatever they have asked me to do, I've done. But now my country and my government is not being faithful to me. I'm not asking for a handout. I just want what I've already earned. No strings attached. When I signed up for the Army, I gave them everything I promised I would. I took oath. I kept my promise. I want the government to keep their promise to me that every other week they'll pay me for work served.
Can I ask, are you still working, or does by furlough mean in your case that you're not actually even going into work, or are you giving work hours without even being compensated?
No, so there are two types of employees within the Federal Bureau of Prisons. There are expected employees, which are essential employees, and then there are those who can be furloughed. So a lot of my colleagues and coworkers are going to work and not getting paid because of my position at the Federal Bureau of Prisons. I'm one who has been furloughed. So,
but it's not like you can go get another job because you still have this job. I mean, like once they get their S together, I mean, you got to go back to work. You didn't get fired. You're just stuck in this place. And I'm sure finding another job or finding other means to bring in income for however long this is going to last, that's got to be just next to impossible.
Well, I've been making calls and trying to call my congressmen and senators and let them know that, you know, how it's affecting the everyday person. But there's more to the story. Even my colleagues that are forced to go to work without pay, you can't get sick and you can't take off leave because there's only two categories. Either you worked or you got furloughed. So if you get sick or your child gets sick or a parent that you're caring for gets sick, you're furloughed. So I could easily be called into work and something could happen at home and I'd still be furloughed. So a lot of people don't understand there's a difference.
Yeah.
There's a huge difference. You know, Congress has to vote to pay, back pay the furloughed employees. I think somebody told me late last night that the Senate voted on something that the House had already voted on to back pay us. And it may sound good, and I've talked to a few senators this week while in D.C., and their thing was senators' offices, their aides, well, eventually you'll get paid. Well, try calling your creditors and saying, well, eventually you'll get paid. They're not trying to hear that.
You know, right on,
the gas
man.
Company, the light company, they're not trying to hear that.
Yeah.
So I made up a number. I said I'm hostage number 858,025. Because now I'm one of 585,000.
Yeah.
There's 800,000 of us that are hostages. And I'm not asking you to pick sides on whether or not you want border security. I've served this country for 29 years. Of course we want border security. But I'm asking you to stand with the people instead of standing with the president. Stand with the people. Because when the president refuses to stand with the people, that's what Congress and independent governing bodies are supposed to do. Government by the people, government for the people. Well, I'm one of those people.
Let me just ask real quick, where were your political leanings before this whole thing happened, especially as a Texan? Did you feel strongly about border control? I know it maybe affects Texas and certain states far and away more than it does, you know, those of us in the Mid-Atlantic or maybe on the West Coast. How did you feel about border security before all this affected your paycheck?
I can tell you this. I haven't found anybody who lives in this state who wants a wall. I can tell you that Congress needs to address the real problem. Those who come here legally and overstay their visa. Those who attacked us on 9/11 were people who came here legally and overstayed their visas. I was just in El Paso a few weeks back. I didn't run into anybody who said they wanted a border wall. Working in a prison, we have walls and fences around our secure facilities. Working at the United States Penitentiary in Beaumont back in 1998, we had towers. It does you no good to have a wall if you don't have no tower. Because it's just a wall with nobody manning those walls. It's just a wall. So you're never going to be able to replace good old-fashioned manpower.
Mm-hmm. I can't thank you enough, Cliff. You really helped me kind of understand this. And I'm hoping that disagreements and all this hot air get sucked up eventually out of the room and cooler heads prevail. But in the meantime, man, I'm wishing you the best. And I just can't thank you enough for sharing your thoughts with me today.
Build a wall. Don't build a wall. That's not my concern. My concern is pay me so I can feed my daughter and take care of my wife.
Our next guest is an actor who probably spent as much time doing close quarters combat training with special operations teams as he has reading scripts. He starred in films like Saving Private Ryan, The Great Raid. He played a SEAL team commander in Captain Phillips and a security team member who bravely fought in the film 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. And still many more know him as Master Sergeant Matt Gerhardt on the CBS TV series The Unit, which was about Delta Force. Well, he's now starring and directing the upcoming movie Sergeant Will Gardner, featuring other recognizable military characters like Robert Patrick and Gary Sinise. And with a name like Max Martini, you should have been a bartender, but I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. Welcome to Connecting Vets.
Isn't the last name perfect for happy hour?
And I'm sure you've heard that only a million times in your life. Now, we've heard a lot about your bio before this. I did a deep read-in, and we kind of went through your movie and TV history resume. The question I wanted to ask first and foremost is, what made you gravitate towards all these kick-ass combat warrior roles that we've seen you in?
Well, you know, I don't think it was anything that pulled me in that direction. It was, I did Saving Private Ryan many moons ago, and that probably led to this string of military roles. But look, it's been an incredible ride, and I've just been so fortunate to be part of these incredible retellings, and working with the teams that I have.
You've done a lot with the military. How do you train to perform these roles of arguably one of the toughest divisions of the military? What have you done that makes your performances so legitimate?
Well, generally at the beginning of each of these films, you'll do some kind of a boot camp, which has been just invaluable for me. And I've been very fortunate to have worked with. I've trained with CAG guys. I've trained with SEALs. Sheriff, SWAT teams, FBI, CIA guys. I mean, just contractors for 13 hours. And for the films that I've done, anyway, the training's been extensive. And you get out and you do a solid stretch with these guys and hone in your weapon skills and your tactical skills and grasp a little bit of the mindset, And as a result of all this training, I've become friends with all these guys. I have so many buddies in the Tier 1 world. And I love training on weapons. And I love one of my favorite things in the world is doing CQB and how you have to really work as a team and work off the guys in front of you and be ready to improvise. I love the thinking game behind that. So it's something that I really enjoy doing, and likely that shows on film.
Very cool. Now, this next role we're getting ready to see you in is something that's really important. I mean, it's a big role because it deals with things that are so current. And, the combat vet Will Gardner, who's dealing with PTSD and the lingering effects of the TBI, which he got from some of the heavy fighting in Iraq. Talk to me about Will's journey in this film, because this isn't just short 30-minute happy TV with the hero winning in the end. Like, this is some tough stuff to get through. Talk to me about what he does in this film.
What I wanted to do was tell a story not about a Tier 1 operator, but about a regular infantryman, and the conditions that he returned from combat to face. And, this is not something that every soldier that comes back has to deal with, but so many have. And I also wanted to differentiate between this film and the films about PTS that we've seen already, which is, generally 2 hours of, someone being miserable. So, what I wanted to do was show a healing journey, and really, so I guess the intention was to take this character from a really low place in his life and allow him to reinvent his purpose in life, to, you know, or to find purpose rather, and to reconnect with his son and to lay some survivor's guilt to rest and heal himself. In doing so, find himself in a position to where he could be of assistance to other veterans.
To hear how he does that, here's a clip from the trailer.
I had a purpose over there. You got one here too. But what a
feeling. Thank you for your service. Now get off my premises.
It's your turn, brother. You gotta talk.
I woke up a couple mornings ago and I said to myself, I need some excitement in my life.
You ever want what I have?
All the time.
Mama told me that you got sick during the war. She said you had to go away.
I did.
He wanted right to see William.
And that's a decision he made when? He came here for your son, right? Just because you didn't take a bullet over there doesn't mean the mission's over. I've been this guy trying to survive his own war stories for so long, I can't hardly remember who I'm really supposed to be.
You know, in my mind, it doesn't have the Hollywood ending. It doesn't have a Walt Disney ending, but it's a very positive, inspiring, hopefully, story that will, you know, get injured veterans to come forward for help. I mean, I have a personal friend that, you know, felt that he might be stigmatized if he came forward, or ridiculed if he came forward and asked for help. I mean, Army Ranger, you know, the typical guy that just stereotypical guy that you would imagine that runs into the fight. And, you know, I think that we've chipped away at that, you know, but that was the purpose of the film. And also to, you know, sort of raise and maintain a level of awareness and to raise money for charity.
Yeah, let's touch on that really quick since you brought it up. I know the Gary Sinise Foundation is one of them. He does incredible work around the world and has been doing it, you know, for quite a long time now, honoring veterans and their service. Talk to me about the other two.
There's one of the charities is called Higher Ground. They're based out of Sun Valley, Idaho. They're treating injured veterans with recreational therapies and conventional therapies. One of the things that this charity does, which is just outstanding, is that they have a 3-year follow-up with their veterans. So once you've completed therapy, they stay on you for 3 years to make sure that the healing's continuing and that you're reintegrating properly and that you're not dealing with any issues. They also opened up a branch in Los Angeles, which is addressing the homeless veteran crisis in Southern California. The other charity is called Warrior's Heart, which is based out of Texas. It is not only treating veterans, but also active duty service people and first responders that are suffering from drug and or alcohol dependencies and PTS. Just an incredible organization. Like you said, the Gary Sinise Foundation. I mean, Gary, there's no one that I know that does more for veterans than Gary. And he's practically dedicated his life to it.
I'm glad you're joining the ranks and glad to hear 30% of the take here is going to go to support these things. I've never heard of that with a, you know, major film before. So you're to be commended on that, Max, and appreciate you. I guess the last question is something we may have already touched on, but I wanted to just hit it one more time. Why did this movie need to be made now? Doesn't it just further a narrative that vets are damaged and need help? Or how does this uplift them, and how will it help them by seeing this movie?
Well, I can answer that, because, you know, the reason that it's still relevant is because it's not front page news anymore. And there's still the numbers are very sobering. You know, I'm approximating, but it's very close, that on any given day in the U.S., there's 50,000 plus homeless veterans on the streets of America. There's been over 300,000 diagnosed cases of combat-related traumatic brain injuries. In 2015, you know, an Inspector General's report came out stating that over 300,000 veterans had passed awaiting pending health care claims. And I think we're still in and around 22 a day, 20 to 22 a day taking their lives. So, you know, we still have these tragic numbers in the U.S. And, you know, look, I mean, I have friends that have had tremendous experiences with the VA, but I also have a lot of friends that haven't, you know, and I think it's a very difficult system to navigate, so I hear. And, you know, and we're bettering it. And I know just from my conversations with Gary Sinise, I mean, he knows people that are actively trying to figure the system out so that it works more efficiently. But this is why it's so important to support these charities, is that because they're picking up where the VA is falling short. As for the character, look, you know, it's not repetitive, the story. You know, like I said, the character remains heroic throughout this entire film. I was not interested in portraying, you know, one of our veterans, one of our soldiers, as somebody that's wallowing. I really feel like, I know that we've screened this for numerous veterans already, and the response has been tremendous. This film really has the potential to touch and change some lives and get some assistance to veterans in need.
Right on, Max. And I appreciate you sharing in such great depth with us that, because I know the veteran community always kind of like looks at these movies, and we tend to kind of look at it through one eye and sort of say, I don't know, is it really going to, you know, is it going to hit the mark? And it sounds to me like you've taken some care and some detail in not only crafting the story, but in directing the film. So one thing I wanted to point out real quick, I wanted to also thank you for before we get out of here. Your voiceover role in My Little Pony Movie 2017. I couldn't help but notice that in your filmography.
Just another combat film, you know. I met a woman on a plane just quickly, and she said, "Oh, you know, I was a big fan of the unit. You should be doing voiceovers." And we started talking, and about 3 days later, I got this offer for My Little Pony, and my agent called me up crying, laughing so hard. And I said, look, I have to do it, only because it's going to really mess up all my military buddies to see that on my resume. So book it. I'm going in. And I actually had a great time doing it. So
that's awesome.
Yes,
from Delta Force operator to My Little Pony. Good times. Thanks for portraying some seriously great military men. Sergeant Will Gardner comes out January 11th. Max Martini, man. Take care, brother.
Thanks, man.
I have amazing friends who are there for me no matter what.
You have visual on buttercream?
Visual confirmed. Go for cleanup.
Our next guest, Luis Bordenada, is an interesting story. An American actor who joined the Army after graduating high school. Luis is the son of a retired Army sergeant who served 3 combat tours in Vietnam and Korea. This made his recent portrayal as Charlie Burroughs in the feature film Sergeant Will Gardner his most intimate role to date. And here to talk to us a little bit about the transition from the military to the walks of Hollywood, Luis Bordenada. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that, man. Thank you. That's a beautiful intro.
Well, I do what I can. I do what I can here at Connecting Vets. We really try to bring vet stories to life. And yours is an interesting one. And I got to admit, even the IMDb bio and stuff that I was reading on you, it didn't quite have a lot of the lines shaded in. Share with me a little bit about high school and joining the Army, and then kind of what made you walk out of the Army and go towards Shakespeare.
Sure. I joined the military primarily out of necessity, you know. I was in I grew up in El Paso, Texas, and I remember being out of high school, and kind of I had a lot of trouble at home, so I ended up being sort of homeless for a while and like bouncing around from friend's home to friend's home while I was graduating. Like my senior year was a rough year, and so I knew that my dad had served, and I figured after graduating high school, I thought, well, the only way to ensure that I can go to school and, you know, get some money to go to school and get to accomplish my dreams. At the time, I had already sort of had this little tiny idea that I would, you know, that I would try acting. So I wandered off one day. I was wandering around looking for jobs, applying at places. And I saw the Marine recruiting station and the Army recruiting station. You know how they used to be all, they're all like sort of like next to each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I walked into, I tried to walk, I went from like, I was applying, I remember the places, man. I remember it was such a hot day too in El Paso, and I was riding the bus, and I got dropped off at this like mall, like like shopping area, and it was an outdoor mall. And it was a Wiener Schnitzel and like a pizza, CC's Pizza or something like that, right? So I went to try to apply at Bolton. And Bolton were like, "No, we're not hiring." I was like, "Oh, man, okay." So I walked on over to the, I was walking past the Marines, and I was like, "I'm just gonna try it. I'll see." And I walked and I knocked on their door, and it was closed. So I wandered off to the Army station, and I opened the door, and I said, "Hey, excuse me, you guys know when the Marines come in?" And they were like, "No, but have you talked to us?" And then forget about it.
Oh,
a couple months later, I was shipping off to St. Louis.
Oh, that's crazy. And in fact, you grew up right near Fort Bliss. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of an amazing coincidence that you started down the path of the Marines. Might I suggest, in hindsight, the Navy could have been a good choice for you, too. As a Navy veteran myself, I'm just here to say that.
Of course, man. Hey, I regretted it. I was like, oh, my God, I could have tried the Navy or the Air Force.
You could have been at the beach,
like,
bro.
Life's a lot. Yeah, man, I could have traveled a lot more.
Could have been at the beach. But talk to me about your time in. What was your MOS? What'd you do?
I was a 62 Bravo, and I was a paratrooper. As soon as I joined, I just, you know, once they said, yeah, I was like, I want to go all in. I want to go, you know, full on, gun-ho, everything. I want to do it all. I wanted to go Green Beret, everything. So first thing they did was, okay, we'll sign you up for, and I went in for airborne school. But then once I was in airborne school, between airborne school and Ranger, because I went in to meet for the Rangers, because they had like a recruitment meeting after, as you're finishing airborne school. And I remember I had fallen in love with this girl at the time.
Uh-oh.
And they were like, you know, this one Ranger was really nice, but he's like, if you do this, forget about, like, having a relationship for a while. And I was like, really? So then I was like, let me think on it more. And then I shipped off to Fort Bragg, and I ended up falling even deeper in love. So I just kind of, like, I was like, I'm just going to focus on my Army stuff. And I did, you know, also the 62 Bravo heavy equipment engineer for the 82nd Airborne Division for a bit. And I was there for about two and a half years till I got injured on a jump. And my parachute, you know, had a malfunction. It didn't fully open on time. So then when it did open, it had a hole in it. So then I landed like a sack of potatoes.
Mm.
But I was able to drop my equipment, you know, so that it didn't hurt me. And then from then on, I started having back issues, so they were like, no, you can't jump anymore. So I finished my last 2 years were in the 41st Engineer Battalion in Fort Drum, New York. And man, my last day in the Army, like my ETS day, was September 11th, because the same day that everything happened. I woke up in the morning to full alert. And I was lucky enough and blessed enough that they let me, Sergeant Major, let me go. I was like, you know where to find me, man? And he said, I know where to find you. We're not to get out of here.
Now, what's crazy is getting out of the Army on 9/11 isn't even the most interesting part of this interview. He went on to tell me about going from the Army to discovering Shakespeare and acting in El Paso, Texas, which doesn't exactly sound like the fast track to Hollywood. Suffice to say, he would learn how to become an actor there. But it was the story about where his inspiration from acting came from and where his inspiration to be a military-style character actor that was really moving.
When I was a kid, I saw this movie. My dad, I kind of woke up in the middle of the night and I was walking, you know, like when they're like, your parents don't let you watch TV past a certain time, so you got to go to bed. And I go to bed and I hear this noise. So I sneak around the living room, like the hallway out to the living room. I'm like low crawling a little bit. I know that was low crawling already. And I make it to the living room, and my dad is just sitting on the couch facing away from me. So I see his back, his shoulders. And so I sneak past the couch and I see the side of the couch, and I can see the TV, and it's Platoon. And this is weird because it's very cinematic in my head. You know,
right.
I don't even know if it was this cinematic when I was there, but I remember watching Willem Dafoe when he gets killed, and you know they gun him down, and I remember his moment. I could see my dad have a, like, from behind, I could see his shoulders, you know, silhouetted with the TV, and I could see him kind of shake his shoulders a little bit, kind of like he had some sort of emotional connection to that. And at that point, that was like just something inside me. And I was like, I was about 13, and I just felt I want to be that. I want to be in that world, creating this sort of feeling on other people.
And talk to me about now, as we get ready to talk about this movie, Sergeant Will Gardner. It has to be one of your most intimate roles, because now it combines everything that we've just talked about. Your love for the military, your service, your real-world knowledge of what those sacrifices are that they make in divisions like 82nd. And then now being an actor and a storyteller. Share with me your character's name and his journey in this movie.
Charlie Burroughs, which to me is as a Latino American actor, is a blessing, you know, because for me I'm an American who served in the military, and you know, have a character named Charlie Burroughs, and go in and audition for this guy, to me was just something of a dream, you know, because I know this person, I am this person, you know, I've been everything that this character is, and like you said, it is beautiful that to have everything that happens in your life come almost full circle into one character. You know, this guy, he lost his leg in the war. He's a young guy, lost his leg in the war, came back home. VA didn't take care of him like he should have. He lost, he's walking around with PTSD, homeless, can't really handle life in the civilian world, because a lot of times what happens is when you're out there, if you get injured in combat, I've spoken with a lot of vets that were injured in combat and came back different. A cousin of mine himself wasn't injured, but he came back different. Life stops for a second. It's just like in a second, like life stops. And then suddenly you find yourself placed in this whole different world. But you haven't finished that mission yet. So suddenly you're here, but your mind is still over there trying to finish what you were supposed to finish. And so that's what this guy is to me. He's trying hard to finish a mission that he wasn't able to finish, and then a mission in his life. My character, Charlie Burroughs, and Max's character, Will Gardner, end up meeting both homeless in the middle of Albuquerque as my character is getting beaten up by some hoodlums or whatever. And they end up going on this journey. They hit it off, you know. Will Gardner defends him, and they end up hanging out, hitting it off, having good conversation, talking about military life and things. And then they both go on this journey on this motorcycle across the country to get to the Arlington Cemetery, where Max Martini's character finds a way to have closure within his own, for his own self. And then my character has closure for himself with his father. It's a beautiful, beautiful journey that they go on.
Well, I'm up for this movie, man. Good times. I thank you for portraying some seriously great veteran role, for being a veteran. And Sergeant Will Gardner comes
out
January 11th. Luis Bordonada, keep up the great work.
I look forward to talking to you again. Thank you yourself.
Well, as they say in Hollywood, that's a wrap. I want to thank all my guests for being on the CV Report today. And if you're looking for more follow-up on any of these stories, feel free to check out connectingvets.com. We invite you to download the radio.com app, where you can get this podcast and unlock a whole world of other podcasts and great radio stations from around the country. And if you're listening in Apple Podcasts, Google, or Stitcher, please subscribe so we can get in your phone and in your ear each and every week. In the meantime, I'll be looking for stories that are interesting, stories that are unusual, and stories that hit the heart, so I can entertain you the next time I file another CV report.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.